Let's get rolling on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Here's John Beaver, financial advisor at Phase 3 Advisory Services. John, welcome back.
Hi, John. Good to be here.
Fed's not going to raise the rates, right?
At least not in June, but there's still plenty to watch there with the Fed. You know, this is being called a hawkish pause or a skip. The Fed futures are predicting no rise in June. But in July, over a 60% chance of a rate hike. And many of the Fed officials have hinted that they're not done yet. They still got to beat that inflation down to 2%. Now, here's how I look at this. If I was from the Fed and I could give you my viewpoint, I think this is how they're looking at it. 2% is their target. And so they're still thinking they need to raise rates. They're just going to take a pause here, maybe partly to make sure that the market doesn't get too antsy. Maybe they really do want to watch. I don't know. But they're still thinking they need to raise rates. So, but what if they're wrong? What if 2% shouldn't be the target of inflation? Maybe they should be also thinking about raising that target to 3%. But you know what? We don't know what they're thinking, so we just got to watch what they do.
Well, I wonder what the rush is. I mean, you can't get to 2% until you get to 4 and 3. If you can pause, if you can pause the interest hike in June, maybe we're going in the right direction and it's going to happen.
I would agree with you on that, and I hear many economists saying the same thing, that the Fed has done enough that they should even just stop right here. You know, it's easy to go from the 10% to the 4% inflation with what they needed to do. I mean, rates were ridiculously low. But now going from the 4% to 2%, that could be a little bit harder. It could take longer. I'm okay if we have 4% inflation this year, 3% the next year, 2% the year after that, rather than trying to smash it down to 2%. But you know, this morning, I heard a former Fed president in Michigan, and he says he thinks the Fed should not pause. And so he said, if you don't raise quickly on the rates, you'll ultimately have to raise the rates even higher. Now, he's a lot smarter than me. And you know, I'll say this, the mistake of not raising rates years ago was also made by a bunch of people a lot smarter than me. So, you know, who knows what the right thing is to do, but I found the camp of waiting. And, you know, the economy is starting to show just little signs of slowing. Restaurant and airline traffic this summer is actually down a little bit compared to last summer. Now, it's still really strong. We all know that. When we go to the restaurants, those of us that are flying right now, it's a zoo at the airports, but maybe a little less than last year. And then credit card delinquencies are starting to increase. Those 30 to 90 day credit card delinquencies are on their way up a little bit. Auto loan credit quality is decreasing. Business surveys reveal the economy is slowing. So, yeah, let's just hope and wish that the Fed just does more than a skip, that they actually pause here for quite a while.
Do you hear people talking about the cost of groceries and gas as much?
Not as much, because it's not rising as much. Now, it's not coming down. We've seen a little bit come down in the price of, you know, of gasoline, where depends on where you're at in the Chicagoland area. Maybe you're a little bit below $4. Maybe you're a little bit above $4. But at least we're not seeing that what felt like a week over week rise in prices. So, yeah, not as much discussion there. But, you know, it's funny. My wife was just out the other day. She was kind of driving around. She goes, you know what? I just don't see as many houses that have really decked out the flowers this year. You know, I don't know if that's an accurate indicator, but maybe it's an indicator that inflation is still hitting all of us. But it is easing. So last week, the jobs report, you know, the unemployment claims came in at 233. This week, they came in at 261. So that means a few more claims right now. So that's good, although continuing claims dipped. So that's kind of contrary there. But the inflationary readings this week were nil. I mean, we had the PMI and factory orders, no big deal there. But next week, watch out. We got a lot happening. We got the Fed that's going to, you know, announce probably no rate increase. That's good. We've got the PPI coming, the CPI coming, and central bank action, not only just in the U.S., but in Europe and in Japan.
We're talking about interest rates and the sort of hawkish pause that they're going to take in June. Now, what does this mean for real estate and interest rates on homes, John?
Yeah, so several issues here. Number one, we still have this overhang of buyers. You know, we oftentimes talk about overhang of inventory. There's not enough inventory. We have an overhang of buyers. There's still estimated to be maybe 5 million units short across the nation. So there's going to be that constant demand there. Which means it's not going to take much drop in interest rates to spur another movement of buyers. So that's sort of a floor there. Now, what is going to happen with interest rates? Well, if the Fed raises pretty aggressively between now and the rest of the year, and I would say aggressively would be, you know, at least one more quarter point hike, maybe a half a point. While that is going to push up short-term interest rates, it might have the effect of bringing down the longer-term interest rates because it increases the chance of a recession. But over the whole picture here, the market seems to have adjusted to these current prices. So you have this constant demand there of buying property. So I don't see much downside in prices, which is going to hurt those buyers that are trying to get in, which means they're going to stretch to get into there. And this is part of that feedback loop into whether we're going to have a recession or not. So if you're going to have continued strong demand in housing simply because there's so many people that need to get into housing, that means that there's going to be demand for things to go along with when you buy a house, and that is buying stuff that's going to help the economy. So while we're not out of the woods for a recession, I'm still in the camp I think we're going to have a recession. I'm in that camp that I think it's going to be a mild recession, and I just don't see a big downturn in the price of houses because of the demand side.
You said the economy has never experienced a 500 basis point rise in rates without running into trouble. What's trouble?
So trouble is a recession. Trouble is a dislocation in the banking system. So we've already seen the dislocation in the banking system. It is not a crisis, but it certainly is a dislocation. And some of the weaker banks have already failed. It's okay. We've got FDIC insurance out there as long as your balances are under $250,000. But that other piece there, running into trouble, is a recession. And a very common early warning indicator for a recession is a yield curve inversion, and that's where your short-term interest rates are higher than your longer-term interest rates. Normally, your longer-term interest rates are higher. And typically, we see a recession start somewhere between 6 to 17 months after the inversion. The inversion took place in November. And so, you know, we're at that point where we could see a recession any point in time in the next 12 months. And what we see along with that is that the market peaks before a recession. So the order of these things to watch for is inversion. That's taken care of. Reduction in stock prices. So we're in a rally right now. So we'd be watching for a top. And then lastly, the recession comes. So there's a good possibility that we'll have a reduction in the stock prices. But as I said to real estate, I don't know that we'll have much reduction in the price of homes.
Liked the pace of the increase of the indices? It seems like, oh, what do you know? We're in a bull market on the S&P. It hasn't been a boom. It seems to me it's been somewhat gradual. Is that a good thing? And I know you just talked about this, but do you see that continuing this year, or are we going to peak real quick?
Yeah, I think it's time for a pause for several reasons. We're in an earnings recession, so when earnings go down, it's hard for the market to go up. We've got rising interest rates, which also puts pressure on stock prices. So I think the market is just a little bit ahead of itself. But this is mostly due to just 8 mega cap techs.
Yeah.
These 8 mega cap techs make up over 25% of the S&P 500 index. There's 500 companies in the index. Only 8 make up a quarter of the index. And these are partly related to AI. So there's this AI craze right now, which is, you know, pushing the NASDAQ higher. It's kind of pulling the rest of the market. But it's interesting, if you take those 500 stocks and you equal weight them, that index is down 1%, while the S&P weighted index is up 9%. That's a spread of 10%, one of the largest spreads I've seen. So I think the market is ready for a pause. Don't know that it will. Can't predict that on a day-by-day basis. But I don't think we're going to get back to the previous highs before we see another decline associated with the recession.
I wonder if those 8 weren't doing so well. Or say the world changed and for some reason, it's hard to imagine, but chips weren't so important or AI wasn't evolving. My point is, isn't it possible that in the evolution of this market that those other stocks will have their day too, that somebody else will replace these, and that there's maybe some pent-up strength in some of these undervalued stocks right now?
We have seen that in this last week where there actually was some breadth that came into the market where we saw a lot of issues that just weren't participating at all in the rally. They had a little blip up. That's encouraging. that indicates that there is some pressure there to buy those stocks. And that's why I think the decline, if we're going to have a recession, mm-hmm. then I think we are going to have a pullback in the market. But if we're going to have a pullback in the market, I don't think it's going to be that deep. I don't think we'll go back to the previous lows because of the undervaluation and a lot of the issues, and also because I'm of the opinion it will be a mild recession.
I'm going to leave you on that then. John Beaver, Financial Advisor, Phase 3 Advisory Services. John, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for your thoughts today.
You are welcome.
So you wish maybe the markets were doing better for you, or maybe your bank account was doing better. There's an interesting almost hedge to consider. John Morgan joins us now, co-founder and managing partner of Interra Realty. InterraRealty.com is the website. John, you're on WGN. How are you today?
I'm doing great, John. I appreciate you having me.
What do you guys do?
So we're a middle market apartment brokerage. We primarily focus Chicagoland and the surrounding suburbs. Occasionally we go out of market, you know, depending on a client's need. But, you know, I always tell people we typically sell the 20 to 200 unit apartment complex.
So who are your clients then? Are they the sellers or the buyers?
Both. So typically we wind up, you know, in 90% or more of our transactions, we ultimately wind up representing both parties. It's just kind of a function of the way our business works, and we know who to go to quickly.
Somebody wants to sell. You know somebody out there who would be an investor. How much then capital are we talking about? Because I'd like to hedge against the markets, but I don't know that I got the resources to buy 200 units.
Yeah. Yeah, so I'd say our typical deal sizes range right now, you know, 2 to 20 million is kind of our average. Obviously, when you get into that 200 plus unit spectrum, you know, it gets materially larger than that. But, you know, I'd say our typical wheelhouse is that 2 million to 20 million transaction.
So these are average investors. These are businesses that are in the business of owning and managing apartment buildings then, huh?
You know, you'd really be surprised by that. I would say, you know, our typical client base ranges from, you know, the high net worth investor down to, you know, people who have built their business starting by being a janitor in these buildings years ago. And over time, they built up equity and they've continued to buy new apartment buildings and add to, you know, their overall bottom line. So our clients really have a pretty broad spectrum of who we're dealing with on a daily basis: doctors, lawyers, private investors, equity funds. So it's a pretty broad spectrum.
I think a lot of us know somebody like that, somebody who was in an apartment building, they bought the apartment building, then they bought another apartment building, rents came in, and they just kept turning the cash into other buildings. And the next thing you know, they've got a half a dozen units or buildings that they own. That's not atypical.
That's exactly right. We see that time and time again, and you know, those become some of our best clients because they become transactional in nature. And you know, it's kind of the rinse and repeat philosophy where once they've figured it out, they get a building stabilized, they then either refinance it, they potentially sell it, they can 1031 exchange into something larger, and we see it over and over again in our business.
How much of a conundrum for those people is the maintaining of the units, managing the business, the plumbers that you need, the paint, the vacancies? How much of it is the management of those?
It's a great question. I mean, people always want to think about real estate potentially as an armchair investment. I would say, you know, the vast majority of our clients, if they are not a management company, they will seek out a third party management company, which we always encourage. I mean, we have a lot of people who have come into the market from, you know, you name it. I mean, kind of all over the U.S. that have started investing because either they didn't like the pricing in California, they didn't like what was going on in New York, and they saw similarities here. And so, like, we make introductions all the time to different property management companies. Those that manage it themselves, you know, it's a bit of a learning curve. You know, I mean, it's not as armchair as somebody wants to think. You know, I mean, you do have to take all of those things into account. You know, somebody has a washer dryer that floods in the middle of the night and you're managing, guess who's getting the phone call. So, you know, we find a lot of people start out by trying to do the management themselves, and ultimately they'll pivot at some point when they get to a certain scale where they, you know, it's good for them to transition it to a third party.
Talk about the math on this then, because then the rents have got to cover not only the cost of the units and the taxes, but that third party manager. So what's the margin like?
So again, it's kind of, you know, similar to the way we get paid in the transaction. It's all dependent on the size of the deal in terms of what you can negotiate for, say, a property management fee. You know, typically, you know, our down the fairway transactions, it's a 5-6% management fee. The larger that project gets, and depending on how it's staffed, you know, a smaller building doesn't require full-time dedicated staff. Once you get over, say, 100 units, you're going to find that somebody's going to probably have a full-time maintenance person, potentially a part-time or even full-time management allocated salary. So it's kind of a negotiation typically amongst the property management group. That's how they want to staff it, how you want them to staff it. But, you know, typically when we're underwriting deals and when we're looking at other people's trailing 12 months or P&Ls on property level, you know, we find it's consistently around that 5% range. Again, scaling down depending on the scale of the project.
Rents are high right now, aren't they?
They are. You know, we like a lot of markets, saw pretty substantial rent growth. You know, certainly we weren't as high as some of these Sunbelt markets, but the reality of it is, you know, we've had pretty meaningful year-over-year gains in rent growth. I think statistically through April, you know, it was still north of 5% in terms of year-over-year rent growth. You know, historically, people would underwrite and make assumptions that it was going to be 2.5-3%. So we're about double that right now.
What are the hot neighborhoods?
So we at Intera, we pretty much broker throughout every marketplace. We've got 20 plus brokers here. We kind of teach everybody to train and focus on a specific neighborhood. We've seen the South Side be very hot for several years now. When my partner David Goss and I started down there, there was not what I would consider a very large group of professional brokers that were in that marketplace, but there was
Are you talking Halstead or South?
Like South Shore, further than that. So like South Shore, Washington Park, Hyde Park, Bronzeville neighborhoods have seen pretty explosive transactional velocity over the last 10 years, really. So we found a lot of people because down there you can get a better cap rate, again, if you're either an owner operator or you have a good third party management company that can oversee your rent collections and your maintenance of your properties, you get a better overall yield. And so we've seen a pretty large influx of out of state capital that has come in here to buy up buildings. And quite a bit from New York and California.
Really? So these are people, that's interesting, from the coasts who will own a building on the South Side and hire a manager. What's then the condition of those buildings or the tenants? I mean, I'd like that it was local ownership, that somebody was, you know, there for their tenants.
Yeah, well, what we find, if you're that out-of-market owner, unless you are coming here to build a portfolio that's, you know, call it 200-plus units, you're likely going to find that those people have local boots on the ground management. And so, you know, we always encourage those introductions if it's somebody who's brand new to the market. But, you know, it's definitely something that people have to take into account.
Is there a fund I can get? Like, I don't want to own a building, and I sure as heck don't want to fix your plumbing. But how about I just invest in a fund that trades in rentals? Is there such a thing?
There definitely is. There's always people out in the marketplace. There was a large transaction that occurred earlier this year with a good client of ours, Pangea, that they did exactly that. I mean, in 2008, they went out and they started a first fund, and that was successful in 2008. And when you talk about conditions, the conditions of most of the properties we're selling today are vastly different than they were from 2008 to 2012, where, you know, people during the last credit crisis, I mean, they walked away from their buildings. The banks didn't really know how to maintain. They didn't really understand that the third party receiver or property manager wasn't necessarily maintaining your properties. And so there was a large volume of neighborhood housing that went into complete disrepair. And so they were well positioned at that point. They raised pretty significant capital and they ultimately sold their Chicagoland holdings this year. So from 2008 till closed in December of this year.
John Morgan,
you know, a lot of the stuff that we're selling now is all very updated and renovated over the last many years.
That's really interesting. You are the co-founder and managing principal of Interra Realty. That's I-N-T-E-R-R-A, interrarealty.com. Fascinating stuff, John. Good luck to you. Thanks for the heads up on all
that. We appreciate it. Thanks. Thanks a lot for having us on.
Wintrust Business Lunch. More business news. Here's Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. Another Chicago area Starbucks has unionized. It's the 18th store in Illinois to vote affirmatively for collective bargaining. The newest store to unionize is the Evanston Starbucks at 1734 Sherman Avenue. Workers selected Starbucks Workers United with a vote of 12-4. It's the second Starbucks in Evanston to unionize. 300 Starbucks stores have voted in favor of collective bargaining nationwide. Weeks after announcing they wouldn't accept new homeowners policies in California, two Illinois insurance companies have announced major rate hikes for the Golden State. Bloomington-based State Farm is asking for a 28% increase. Northbrook's Allstate has requested a 40% rate hike. Both increases must be approved by California regulators. State Farm's increase would add about $350 to the average policyholder's bill. Both insurance companies have cited higher catastrophe costs, including higher prices for rebuilding. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
And Steve Alexander has the business of food.
Yeah, hi there. It's a Mr. Fizz Friday, and we've got a sing-along coming up. Let's go ahead and get the band started. And gardening guru Jim Fizzell will join us in a moment after I tell you we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience your life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, let's go all together now. Sing it, Mr. Fizz.
Boy, I'll tell you, it is dry. Steve, you know, we're in a serious drought here in the greater part of Chicagoland and a good part of Illinois, Wisconsin. We had a total of about 0.9 inches in normally the two wettest months of the year when we should get between 8 and 9 inches. We need water, and we need to do some watering. For those of us who have to water in our yards, we need to prioritize because water is a valuable commodity and it's expensive. So we need to look at the things that are most valuable and water them first, and that's usually the trees. Watering of a mature tree, it's important to do it right. Set a sprinkler to cover the entire area under the drip line of the tree and apply a measured 2 inches of water every 2 weeks or so when the trees wilt. Set a coffee can out there and measure it. When you get 2 inches of water, that's plenty. If you have new trees, you need to set a slowly running hose underneath that tree or use the tree gators. These are available at garden stores. You can buy them. They're green. They go around the base of the tree, hold 20 gallons of water. You fill them up with water, and it just seeps out the bottom for a day or two. Good way to conserve water and to get the water that those plants need. With shrubs and ornamentals, you really need to cover the entire beds with a sprinkler and put down about 2 inches of water every couple of weeks. With your lawns, set a sprinkler. Apply a measured 1 inch of water when the grass begins to wilt, and don't water again or unless the grass wilts again. It's important to water right. Pay close attention to what your plants are telling you because they will tell you much better than any calendar or anybody else can tell you when to water, and then do it when they say so.
Mr. Fizz, Jim Fizzell, from the farm to your belly. Today's National Strawberry Rhubarb Pie Day. I'm Steve Alexander, and that's the business of food on 720 WGN.
Okay, let's visit with our friend Janelle Iacino, the bug girl, from Rose Pest Solutions, about an event coming up that everybody should know about, but particularly girls. Hey, Janelle, how are you today?
Hi, I'm great. Happy Friday. How are you?
I'm really good. By the way, before we talk about the event, a dry summer, what does that mean for bugs and pests? Is that good for us and bad for them, or how do you score that?
Yeah, I was just listening to, was it Mr. Fizzy saying we've only gotten 0.9 inches of rainfall the last 2 months, and I'll tell you, that has really kind of postponed a lot of infestations we would normally see this time of year. Usually by this time, we've got mosquitoes all over the place, we've got flies breeding all over, but without moisture, you know, there's a lot of that kind of just stops. Pests like ants and termites, they need water. They need water to survive. And so I think they're going deeper into the ground and we're not seeing them as much.
What is the rat population like right now?
Oh, that never stops. I remember back when it used to be just a winter cold month issue, but now that is, It's explosive in Chicago. I mean, we've topped the charts now for, I think, 9 years for the rattiest city in America, which still blows my mind that New York is not as ratty as us. But maybe just we have more people complaining about it. Maybe that's what it is.
You've been a regular voice about these kind of topics on the radio. It means you understand science and natural science. And there's an event coming up called Spark Day that will encourage more girls to follow your footpath. What is that all about?
Yes, I am so excited for this. So our sister brand, usually when I'm on the radio, I'm representing Rose Pest Solutions, but our sister brand is called Franklin Pest Solutions, which has offices throughout the state of Indiana. And I have worked with the Girl Scouts of Greater Chicago and Northwest Indiana to create an opportunity for young people. And it's not just exclusive to Girl Scouts. It's actually open to the public. And it's all ages are invited, because my mission is to get kids and students interested about all the different environmental science careers out there that they may not know about. So we've got a great program lined up tomorrow where I will have a beekeeper, an entomology student from Purdue University. I've got a wildlife rehabilitator from Humane Indiana Wildlife coming with some native wildlife. And we're just going to allow the registrants to explore all these different career paths, because there's no question we're struggling. A lot of businesses are struggling with employment right now, right? So this is one way that I'm trying to kind of inspire the topic in younger people to maybe consider these lesser known career paths.
I know you're going to do one in Northfield. This is going to be tomorrow, though, from 9 a.m. to 11:30 on Howe Road in Northwest Indiana. Is that right? At the Dunes Learning Center, right?
Correct. Yes. The Dunes Learning Center is an amazing facility. They do summer camps, and not just summer camps. They have camps for every season, all year round. And it's just incredible how much you can learn just by being there.
So is it too late to sign up, or we could sign up for the one in Northfield?
So, yeah, we are maxed out for tomorrow, which is amazing to me, because that means that there are a lot more people out there interested in science than, you know, we thought. But in the fall, we will be having one in Northfield, and that has taken place a couple years now in a row. And we're trying to do more of these, not just in, you know, Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana, but I'm trying to use this STEM career model in other markets that we serve, like Indianapolis and Milwaukee and all the way down in Louisville, Kentucky, too. So I'm spreading my passions for science.
Well, we know you are passionate about it. You've been a great voice and really an encouraging one about all of these things. So, Janelle, let's catch up in the fall then when that second one comes around, okay?
Sounds great. Thank you so much.
The Bug Girl, Janelle Iacino, Marketing Director at Rose Pest Solutions.